Good morning. It's time for In the Green Outdoors with Gail Martin and Carol Kelly. Each week, the ladies will bring you gardening and planting ideas, tell you about native Ohio plants, prairies and habitats, and great tips for everything in the green outdoors. This week with Carol Kelly.
Hello again, everyone. Is it just me, or does it seem as if this crazy summer full of meteorological records is racing by? It hardly seems possible that I have turned the page of our wall calendar over into August already, which means autumn is staring us in the face. Recently, as I was doing my twice-daily walkabout through my garden, pulling the odd weed and seeing what plants were in need of more water, I checked several areas in the yard where I have three different species of milkweed growing. I have common milkweed, swamp milkweed, and butterfly weed. Over the last couple of weeks, I finally had begun to see monarch caterpillars and the occasional milkweed bug on all three species. Earlier this past week, I noted that tussock moths also are present, packed solidly side by side on the leaves of the remaining plants in the front yard, but they've completely stripped the swamp milkweed and common milkweed in the very back of the yard, leaving only the skeletal remains of stems and leaves, the veins sticking out at all angles. I know that at this time of year, many monarch enthusiasts will cut milkweed plants back by about a third, even to a half, in an effort to stimulate tender young growth for later appearing caterpillars. But I don't think my plants will have the energy remaining in the roots to regrow at all, not this year at least. I was happy to see that my large, healthy-looking swamp milkweed, in a bed I have along the southeast side of our house, has had no tussock moth larvae, knocking on wood here, but it's hosting several monarch caterpillars. I wonder if it's because it grows in a crowd of purple coneflowers, gaudy yellow black-eyed Susans, the spectacular white flowers of wild quinine, and the bright red flowers of royal catchfly. Perhaps these are confusing the moth, but that's just a wild guess. One of the primary predators for moths of all sorts are bats. However, the adult milkweed tussock moths tend not to be on the menu, having ingested the toxic cardiac glycosides present in the sap of milkweed plants. Interestingly, as a further defense, adult milkweed tussock moths emit an ultrasonic click that bats recognize. This sound is intended to warn away the bats, since they certainly don't want to eat a toxic meal. There are some species of birds that do eat tussock moth caterpillars, though, notably woodpeckers, blue jays, and chickadees, despite the apparent nasty taste of the caterpillar. Also, the distinctive tufts of the hair on the fuzzy larvae easily break off and embed in a predator's mouth or throat, causing immediate pain and swelling that teaches most birds to reject them. In general, stinging hairs of caterpillars may be divided into two groups. They may either be long, flexible hairs or stout bristles. Some types of hairs break off and cause mechanical injury. Other types can actually puncture the skin, rather like tiny porcupine quills or the hairs on prickly pear cactus fruits. Some caterpillar hairs even can inject venom. Tussock moth caterpillars are not venomous, but can have both types of long, tapering hairs, and the harmful effects may be enhanced by a single person's overall sensitivity. The young son of one of my neighbors handled some identified type of bristly caterpillar when at summer camp one day and suffered enough distress to warrant a trip to the ER. Bear in mind, though, that while not all hairy caterpillars are hazardous, unless the caterpillar is identified as innocuous, don't handle it. It's best to err on the side of caution. After all, it's a jungle out there. Now, in contrast to the hordes of tussock moth larvae present, I've seen very few of the usually ubiquitous black and orange milkweed bugs on any of my three species of milkweed plants. And then it was only adults and no nymphs. I inferred a moment ago that tussock moths most commonly feed in tightly packed groups and always outnumber monarchs. This is because the female moth lays masses of eggs on a given plant all at once, where the monarch lays eggs singly, scattered around the plant or on several plants. Female milkweed bugs may lay as many as 2,000 eggs in 1 month. but I think the tussock moths have denuded the plants before those bug larvae have had a chance to have a place at the table. Milkweed bugs, whether the large or small species, feed on the seeds, leaves, and stems of milkweed of all species by piercing and sucking the sap, not by chewing on the leaves. Generally speaking, milkweed bugs are more of a nuisance than a threat to the plants. However, when they pierce the seeds within the pods, those seeds no longer are viable, so that can be a problem. To protect the seeds from predation, one may tie mesh organza bags over the pod clusters once they have formed. If you wish to actually control the bugs, the usual way is to knock them into containers of soapy water, as I have described before when speaking of Japanese beetles, asparagus beetles, and others. Remember, though, don't spray any kind of pesticides on your milkweed plants, since that also will kill monarch caterpillars. You may have seen milkweed plants hosting bright orange oleander aphids, which feed only on members of the milkweed family. Aphids may be washed off of plants with a strong blast of water from a hose, or, again, one may resort to the squish option. Now, while there's a good bit of milkweed growing among all the prairie plants at OSUM, Sawyer Ludwig Park, west of the city of Marion, in Gallant Park down at Delaware County, and along many rural roadsides, I began to wonder whether there's really enough milkweed to go around and to accommodate the voracious appetites of both species of caterpillars, one a moth, the other a butterfly, and as well as the other insects that feed on these plants. A newsletter from the Buckeye Yard and Garden line has addressed the issue of caterpillar competition. BYGL editor Joe Boggs asserts that native milkweed tussock moths have the same inalienable food rights as monarchs. Royal sovereignty should not rule the distribution of plant host resources. Monarch butterflies are beautiful insects, and their plight remains uncertain. However, good intentions can be taken too far. Well, it's certainly true that tussock moth caterpillars are ravenous feeders, and there are two generations per season, so they are sometimes a serious competitor with monarchs. The tussocks also have another advantage. They can feed and develop on other members of the dogbane family, while monarchs cannot. The black, orange, and white color of the late instars, that is, the nearly mature milkweed tussock moth caterpillars, like monarchs and a host of other insects that eat milkweed, advertise their chemical defense strategy using color. Like many other milkweed-eating insects, the tussock moth caterpillars dodge being someone's meal by accumulating in their flesh the alkaloid toxins called cardiac glycosides concentrated in the milkweed sap. And yet, despite the toxicity of milkweed, about 35 species of other native insects also feed on this native plant. You may be familiar with the term aposematism. This is the term used for poisonous reptiles, amphibians, insects, or any other animal that sports a bright red coloration that is meant as a warning signal to potential predators. This sort of red flag says either, "I taste really bad," or, "I could kill you, so don't eat me." Since this bad-tasting poison is what makes monarch butterflies and the other insects distasteful to birds, thanks to mimicry, birds also avoid the viceroy butterfly. While the viceroy, which visually appears to be a somewhat smaller monarch, is not actually toxic, this butterfly is bitter-tasting and distasteful, therefore, to predators, since willow is often the tree that is the host for their caterpillars, along with poplar and cottonwood. Willow is the source of salicylic acid, a botanical source of the active principle in aspirin, making it a valuable medicinal plant, with a long history of use among Native Americans and those who forage for such plants. So, while the similarity of viceroys to monarchs used to be considered an example of Batesian mimicry, since the viceroy is not actually toxic, only distasteful to predators, it makes it an example of Müllerian mimicry instead. This type of biological mimicry is defined as the situation in which two or more species, often foul-tasting and sharing common predators, converge in appearance to mimic one another's warning signals. This convergence of appearance benefits them, since predators need only experience a single unpleasant encounter with any member of a set of Müllerian mimics in order to avoid all creatures of similar appearance in the future, whether or not it is the same species as the initial encounter. Other warning color combinations are bright yellow and black, such as that of many wasps and bees. And then there's the coral snake, with its rings of black, yellow, and red. The chief coral snake lookalikes in the United States are the scarlet king snake, scarlet snake, and milk snake. These harmless mimics share the same red, black, and yellow or white ring pattern, but differ in head color and band color. You may have heard the clever little rhyme that helps one distinguish the color patterns of harmless snakes and that of the deadly coral snake. Red on yellow, kill a fellow. Red on black, you're okay, Jack. This rhyme works in North America, but don't trust its accuracy in other countries, for example in Central or South America. I've touched on this theme of mimicry a number of times in the past, usually in conjunction with a segment of In the Green Outdoors that falls around Halloween. Animals of all sorts have developed various means of avoiding predators. These techniques may include camouflage, masquerade, or apostatic selection, a fancy term for simply looking different from other members of the same species. Or they may simply startle a predator. This often works and gives the potential prey the chance to escape. Some animals give signals while fleeing that let a predator know that they've been seen and thereby deter pursuit by demonstrating that the element of surprise has been lost. Examples include the flag-like tail of the white-tailed deer as they flee, or the jolting, bouncing escape of an impala or gazelle that scientists think may be a way of signaling the fitness and energy of the target to discourage the predator from expending a lot of effort. Other animals employ some sort of distraction. Sea creatures that employ this defense include mollusks such as sea hares, cuttlefish, squid, and octopuses, which eject a cloud of chemicals, including ink, or something called opaline, a feeding deterrent. Birds that give raucous warning calls discourage predators not only by signaling that it's been seen, but these calls serve as a warning all other possible victims that danger is near. The killdeer, a common bird in the fields of rural Marion County, will feign a broken wing, dragging it on the ground and hopping about farther and farther from the nest while emitting wailing distress calls, only to fly back to the nest once the predator has been lured far away from it. Other creatures play dead, the possum being the first example that comes to mind, but also the fawn of the white-tailed deer will experience an instantaneous and severe drop in heart rate in response to an approaching predator, which results in what is called tonic immobility, and it simulates a corpse. Sharks may do this as well. Well, as usual, things seem to have led my thoughts rather farther afield than I meant to go, but I hope that the various facts I shared in this segment have been interesting. This is Carol Kelly saying, be awake and aware of all the intricate and amazing behavior of all of our wild companions here in the green outdoors.
And there's your show for the week. In the Green Outdoors is a production of WZMO Radio. The show airs Saturdays and Mondays right after the second cup at about 9:30 a.m. If you have a question or comment for Carol or Gail, you can email it. Thank you for listening.